It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money, and it is finally May. I'm very excited about that. Finally. Just like over the whole, like, oh, April showers thing. Thank you very much. Mark just asked me what my favorite month is. I would have to say October. I think October is my favorite month. Although I love December. I really do love December. A, my birthday month. B, holiday season. C, often has many days off. All of those things combine to make December probably, actually, I'm going to switch to December. December being the winning month. October, though, is the best month to travel pretty much anywhere. You know, that I will say. All right, this is the program that talks about your favorite months of the year and provides you with relatable, usable financial advice, right? Come on. This is the program that takes the mystery out of everything money. And you know what? It's not scary. It's not boring. We have fun here. That's why we love doing it. Mark's running the show. Mark is the best producer in the world. Maybe I don't say that enough, Mark. I probably should. If you have a financial question, call anytime, 855-411-JILL. And if you want to send us an email, happy to hear from you that way. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We love to start the program with a call. And here we have Victoria, who's on the line from the greater Baltimore area. Hi, Victoria. Welcome to Jill on Money. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so nice to talk to someone that's not trying to sell me annuity or get rid of this annuity and we'll get you another one.
Oh, I know. It's amazing, right? I mean, they are aggressive and persistent. So I guess that's why they make some good salespeople. I'm not so sure that they are always so interested
looking
in what's
for my interest.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So what can I do for you?
Well, we do, and here's the one plan with this annuity. My husband and I have the Hartford Insurance annuity.
Okay.
And it's worth about $57,000. But then I said, well, it's not going anywhere, and they claim that I'm paying a fee every year, which I didn't realize. I guess is that right? You pay fees?
Yeah, you have to pay fees to just hold it. When did you buy the annuity?
About 20 years ago.
So what happens is, like, they're not talking about a commission. You know, usually when you buy a product like that, you pay an upfront commission. But they're talking about the ongoing fees for owning an annuity. Sort of like this. Think of it this way. You know how you have an ongoing fee with a mutual fund that just sort of gets sucked out of the account every year? The same thing goes on with annuities, that there are different expenses that get sucked out of that policy every year. So so right now, this $57,000 annuity, which you said is more than 20 years old, the one fee you don't have to worry about is a fee to get out of it. That's usually called a surrender charge.
We don't have that.
Now, let me ask you a question. Is this an annuity that is inside of a retirement account, or is it not?
This one is not. We took it out. You know, you go to this bank, and you think you're doing good, and they go, oh, well, here's something you can do with your money. And I don't think we put that much into it. But and we could surrender it, but they said, no, just leave it alone, because you then will get a death benefit, like of $7,000.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but who cares? Do you need a death benefit? Let's just talk about this for a second. So you have two annuities?
Yes. Well, no, we had Aviva, which went to Athene, but that's in a retirement.
Okay. So
and we get a distribution from that one.
Okay, so that one is annuitized, so you're not touching that. So the question is, with this other annuity that already has the fees taken, the big fees, which is really the sales charges, have come out, what to do with it? Now, do you need the money at all? Is there any necessary?
No, that's the thing. I don't need it. So they're going to try to tell me, oh, we can make you more money doing something else.
No. We don't. I mean, there's. I would say that there's essentially like a couple of choices here. One is that you leave it alone. It probably isn't costing you as much money now, you know, 20 years later. Are there different choices of investment options within this annuity?
I don't know. I was looking through this before I called you. I do have a number to call the Hartford.
Okay, so what I want you to find out is what kind of annuity is this? Because there's a couple of different types. There is a type that's called a fixed annuity. So you pop a bunch of money in, and there's essentially like a fixed rate of interest. And it's kind of a safe place to park your money.
This is a variable.
Okay, so this is variable. Okay, so within a variable insurance, variable annuity, you will see is when you get the statement, there should be lots of different choices as to how that $57,000 could be invested. So what you need to figure out is, what am I invested in? And is this the right investing for me? Is this the right portfolio for me? So what you want to do is you should have a statement which will then list something that kind of looks like mutual funds. They're called subaccounts inside the annuity. And if you get that list of choices, then we can help you reallocate based on the best choices for you. You know, so how old are you, Vicki?
79.
Okay. So you may say, hey, I don't want a lot of risk in this. And then we choose a low risk option. Or you might say, I don't need this money. I'm investing it for my kids. And then we can choose different options. But every option that is available to you has a slightly different cost structure. So what I would be interested in having you do is to grab a copy of that statement, send it to us so we can look at it and then come back to you with some different ideas. Again, if you don't need the money, moving it to something else is just going to create another level of fees. And I don't think that's really smart for you right now.
That's what the man said to me. Well, you'll get a $7,000 death benefit, so then instead of 59, it'll be 60-something. He said, but if you don't really need it, why don't we surrender it?
No.
No, and I said, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, forgetting about the insurance for a second, which, okay, because, like, who cares? You won't be able to, I mean, you might leave it to your heirs, that's fine. But the problem that I think you're going to run into is that, like, if you start to move it around, you want to move it into something else. If you move it into another annuity, you've got another surrender period that starts and more fees. If you're taking it out of an annuity and moving it into just a general investment account, then you're going to have to pay taxes on the accumulation, and you don't want to do that. So my guess is standing still, keeping it, and making sure that the sub-account investments are aligned with what your goals are is probably going to be the very best option for you. So I want you to send us a copy of those choices, and we'll get back to you. Mark will make sure you have our email address, and we'll get going with that, okay? Thanks for calling. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. It's very easy to get in touch with us. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. Okay. All right. Let's do some more emails because I like to do these. This email broke my heart from Ellen, who said that her son died 3 years ago. and his two children are collecting Social Security. My grandson is a junior in high school. His sister will be a freshman. Will their Social Security continue while they are in college, or does it end at the age of 18? So I went to the Social Security website, just so we're clear about the rules. And if you want to do this, Ellen, you could also check it out as well. Just, you know, literally you go to Social Security Administration, SSA.gov, or search Social Security Benefits for Children. Okay. So the way it works is the kids will receive benefits until they're 18. If your kid is still in high school, 3 months before your child's 18th birthday, I'm reading from this SSA website, the Social Security Administration will send you a notice letting you know that benefits will end when your child turns 18. However, benefits don't end if your child is a full-time student at a secondary or elementary school. If your child is younger than 19 and still attending a secondary or elementary school, you have to notify Social Security. They have to complete a statement of attendance certified by a school. The benefits will then usually continue until your child graduates or until 2 months after reaching age 19, whichever comes first. So that is the issue. Okay? And I don't know. Just one other thing that when you do get benefits, sometimes these, you know, it's such a drag to deal with this. But again, you can go to socialsecurity.gov or SSA.gov, and you can get a lot of these answers. But it's a terrible situation. Sorry that I had to answer that question, but that's it. So no, nothing during college. But you know, you're probably looking at some decent chance for scholarships. I'm hopeful that would be the case. Hey, you know what happened in April? It was Financial Literacy Month. And, you know, I have a very mixed emotions when it comes to financial literacy. But here's something. I did get the results of the National Financial Literacy Test. You know about this, Mark? You're going to like this one. The average score. Now, I mean, I know kids took it. Also, but the average was 63%. That's just silly. That's silly. So I have some of the questions. Don't worry. We're going to go through that. Because you know I wasn't going to. I will tell you that one of the issues that became apparent to me is not only do we need help with our financial literacy in some of the core concepts, but we need some help on what I wouldn't even call a core concept. It would be common sense. I know. It's not. It's just hard for me to believe this. But okay, you ready? Just 44% knew that when you have debt, a loan payment, right? That it's based on both the interest rate and the length of the loan. Only 44. I don't know what they think it's based on. What would it be based on otherwise? Like a perpetual? I could not even tell you what the problem would be there. So that's number one. That's like simple, easy, right? Do you want to know the hardest? The hardest question, the one that had the worst response. You ready? Here's your question. If I invest $100 per month starting at age 21, and that money earns a 7% annual return, how much will I have after 70 years? Any interest in figuring that one out? Okay, but let's say I gave you, four choices. And one choice is you take, you know, this is how we figure out how to do a test. You take, people would say like, okay, I'm going to take $100. I just sneezed, sorry, times 12 months, $1,200 a year. And what most people do is they take that $1,200 a year that save and they multiply it by 70 years. And that is $84,000. So they put $84,000 as a one choice. And then if I were going to construct the test, I would then say, let me take, add 7% of that $84,000 and add that on top, which is whatever, another $6,000. And then I'd just put some random thing in the middle of it. And then I would give you the right answer, which is more than $1.5 million. Okay, let me ask you this one. Here's question two. How can I start setting personal goals now? The number of people who answered that correctly was just 30%. Okay? How about this one? I mean, I think that's sort of like a silly question, but whatever. What is the safest initial step I can take to start building my credit? The correct answer is create a credit plan that includes a budget, money set aside for emergencies, and the steps you'll take to prove to the credit bureaus that you can repay money you borrow. All right, so that seems like a pretty straightforward test. 30, which just means that people can guess, you know? And that's just fine. Let's see what some of the other tests are here. So I guess the one that, by the way, the one that was, that I said was the toughie was called the Advanced Financial Education Test. So, you should check it out. Oh God. What are we going to do? Yeah, I know, but that's like a problem because why are we not teaching the time value of money in high school? See, that's when I get myself a little bit crazy about financial education and financial literacy, you know? Because that to me is, that should be math. What else are we teaching in math? Why do I need, I'm going to sound, math teachers, help me out here. Is it part of a curriculum to teach the time value of money or not? The power of compounding interest. We don't even have to, I don't really care about anything. Someone said to me, you know, Mark, did you have to take home economics or anything like that? Cooking? What did you, like, I had to take either, get you ready for this, cooking, sewing, and the best class that I actually did take was typing. That was good. That was worth taking. Anyway, I really want the, so I don't know if we need a, like, I think just like a general, like, basic skills class. How to balance your checkbook, time value of money. Okay. Anyway, you're listening to Jill on Money on a rant. Sorry about that, gang. 855-411-JILL. And send us an email with your questions. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
Have a question? Call anytime, 24/7, 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Anthony works in the
grocery store. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. 855-411-JILL. Or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Can I read this email about our recent fiduciary episode on the podcast? Okay. So, guys, you know that last month, we were supposed to see the fiduciary standard for retirement account advice go into effect, right? It was supposed to be April 10th. Talked a lot about it on the show here. It was, you know, it was a real bummer that the administration decided to delay it. Right now it's in sort of a 60-month comment period again. And remember, this was the rule. Did I say 60 month? Right now it's in a 60-day comment period. And this was the rule that was supposed to force anyone who is giving retirement advice to be sure to put your best interest first. That's what the fiduciary rule is all about. Okay, so flash forward, like you would think, well, who wouldn't want that, right? Who wouldn't want that? Well, I guess a lot of folks in the industry wouldn't want that. And as a result, you know, it was put on ice for a while. And we did a special episode of the podcast, of the Better Off podcast about fiduciary. And we had someone from the CFP board, someone from the Consumer Federation of America, someone from a robo-advisor, and we had them all together and we just wanted to do a quick update. So, Mark, maybe in the show notes this week, put a link to the fiduciary episode of Better Off. And we got the nicest email from Naomi. And she said, I just listened to your fiduciary rule episode, and I want to applaud you for looking out for consumers and shedding light on, quote, perverse business practices. You're an inspiring person. You're the kind of person in today's generation whose side I want to be on. Please keep up the great work you're doing in your field. I really enjoy the podcast. I tell my coworkers about it all the time. Sincerely, Naomi. Naomi, I heart you. That totally made my day. And it made Mark's day. Because that's what we do both on the podcast as well as the radio show. We do both. And that to me is so important, is that we continue to keep really listening to you. That's what we want to do. We want to listen to you. And hopefully, if you are put first, even in this show, that we are then able to really focus on what's important going forward. Okay? That's our goal here. It's so easy. But it's funny because I guess that for some people in the industry, it's not quite as clear cut. But for us, it is. So anyway, I thank you for that note. Okay, here is a note from Gary. I owe two Parent Plus loans with Navient for $56,000. Remember, guys, Navient or Navient. I don't really know whether it's nay or na, but I'll figure it out. Navient is the spinoff of Sallie Mae. They're the ones that service a lot of the loans that are associated with education debt. So Gary says, I just got a cash gift. In my head, it says pay off the loan and save the rest. But my other side says invest it. I know paying off the student loans at 8.5% interest, what is sort of like the big priority. Next, if I get an inheritance, I'm thinking of putting it in bonds, which pay 2-3% and diversifying in ETFs. Just looking for something that will make 3-5% with low risk. Okay, first of all, if you get an inheritance with 450 or 500 grand, yes, of course, immediately pay off the loan. Pay off the loan. Now, the next part of this is, what are we investing this money for, Gary? Are we looking to put this into like a supplemental retirement account? Are we looking to save for some specific goal like a second home? There's so many questions I have. Do you have a mortgage? Is that something we should look at for this inheritance? Is it going to be part of a broader strategy that you want to incorporate into your financial life? So I think that certainly we can put together a portfolio that's, you know, targeting lower risk, but I have so many more questions for you. So can you shoot us a note back, or maybe even come on the show? Mark, did you try to wrangle him on the show and he said no? Well, tell them I need more info. I really do. So I would just, I would be very happy if that could, if that could happen. Okay. Time? Under two. All right, we're going to do this fast. James writes, my wife and I are both nurses. Wife made $81,000 last year, and that will about, and that will about double once I start working, and no student loan debt. We bought our first home in California. We owe $220,000 on it. We both own our vehicles. Should we pay off the home or do we start investing into retirement accounts? I'll be 25 this month. She is 23. No kids yet. All this is very new to us. We just want to know where to start. Any books into investing or what to do? Well, I would tell you to read my book, except I haven't written it yet. So there's a problem. Mark, I got to get on that. Yeah, I'm going to write a note to myself, book. All right. First of all, James, subscribe to our podcast, Better Off, because in addition to this radio show, that will give you a chance to, you know, just download old shows and listen to some of this stuff. No, don't pay off the house. Yes, start investing into retirement accounts. If you're both nurses, chances are you've got something called a 403B account, and you should use that account, especially if your employer matches your contributions. We want you to do three things. No consumer debt. You have no debt, which is great. We want you to have an emergency reserve fund, so make sure you got 6 to 12 months of money in the bank, and we want you to start maxing out those retirement accounts. That's what you're going to do. Thanks for writing, James. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we would love to hear from you. You got a couple ways to get in touch. Number one, give us a call, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. All right, let's do an email here, ladies and gentlemen. How about that? This is from Roland, who bought an annuity in 2008 from Jackson Life. $200,000 and with a guarantee of 6% a year. And he says, my guarantee is now $296,000. The investment value is $220,000. Not very good as an investment. I did not realize at this time I was paying close to 3% on the guarantee value. So obviously, you know, every rider that you have, either in an insurance policy or an annuity, anything that sounds really cool, inflation rider, cost of living adjustment is sometimes called, a guarantee value, anything that's a little bit special or extra that sounds juicy and awesome is usually costly. So in Roland's case, you know, he's paying an extra fee for that. So he says this has reduced the investment value. So here are the choices. I can receive an annual payment, annuity payment of $14,800. If I leave it in the mutual funds, I still pay 3% on the $296,000 plus 5% I'm taking out. If I move it to a fixed investment within the annuity, I avoid all fees. Of course, I was not told of this option when I discussed it with a financial advisor. Okay. In addition, I'll be 69 in October. I've got an additional $600,000 in a 401k, so I'll need to take distributions on the total soon. My broker wants me to close the annuity and put it in a wrap account that he would manage. Nothing has changed in my financial situation since I purchased the annuity, and now it's no longer seen as a good investment for me or for him. His idea that market will do better and his fee is 1.25%. So I've got to take distributions of about 30 grand a year. Why not take the 3% fixed investment and the 15 grand from this account? It's a single life annuity and my heir gets what's left of the 220. Maybe I'm looking at this wrong. What do you think? Okay, so what I'm hearing right now is, just so we are clear, you have two piles of retirement money, because it sounds like the money that's that annuity is retirement. It's a qualified annuity, so that you rolled over some chunk of money from an IRA, from something, and you popped it in there, because now you're talking about having to take minimum required distribution. So I'm hoping that that's the case. That's what I'm going to presume. Okay, now, so you've got a chunk of money, a couple hundred or say $300,000 in the annuity, $600,000 is in the 401k. So now the question is, how do you want to manage that money? Should the $600,000 be rolled over? Should it stay in your 401k? It kind of depends on whether or not the 401k is good, has lots of fees, whether there's maybe there's some fantastic index fund options. So what I'd want to know, number one, is what's the ability for you to keep the 401k as is, which is absolutely a reasonable choice. The second thing is that if that 401k is not so great and you want to roll it over, should you roll it over to the financial person who tried to get you, who sold you this annuity and put that in a wrap account and pay 1.25% for that? Or three, should you roll it over and manage it yourself? I mean, you're managing your own 401k yourself, so maybe you just leave it alone and then you save 1.25% a year. So all of these questions really would, there a lot of it is personal preference. So I think that what might be very interesting for you is to perhaps go talk to someone else, maybe talk to a fee-only or hourly financial advisor who will look at what you have, right? And then really look and say, wait one second. What is it that I really have here? What do I want to look at in terms of the strategy going forward, right? That's what we really want to check out. And I think if you had a game plan, it would make you feel a lot better. And that game plan would require you to say, what's the best use of this annuity? I already bought it. I paid these fees. Maybe I will use it as my fixed position. And maybe that works really well. And maybe that's the fixed portion of my investing. And the 401k money is the riskier stuff. More of the equities and other things get put in there. All's this to say that what I think is incredibly helpful is to get your head on straight as to what you believe is truly going to be in your best interest. And I think that you need a little bit of a, I think you need a second opinion. So I am going to absolutely, positively say, second opinion, in my opinion, you're probably going to be okay doing it yourself, but give us a call if you want some more help, and then go find someone who will help you out, okay? That would be good. All right. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Michael writes that he's got a traditional tax-deferred annuity, and it is non-qualified. So, do I have to take a required minimum distribution when I'm 70 and a half or leave it alone, acquiring interest, and take it out when I'm ready? It's non-qualified, so after-tax dollars went in. So here's the rule. I don't think you have to, young man, because your required minimum distribution is in order so the government can get paid on money that was not yet taxed. So here is the IRS rule. For an IRA, a SEP IRA, a simple IRA, you must take a required minimum distribution on April 1st of the year following the calendar year in which you reached age 70 and a half. I know it's dumb. I didn't make the rule, okay? All right. Now, if it's a 401k, a profit sharing, a 403b, here's how the required minimum distribution works. Same thing. It's generally April 1st following, but here's your choice, the latter of the calendar year in which you either reach age 70 and a half or retire. So if you're still working and you're 72 years old and you've got a 401k, a 403b, or some other defined contribution plan, you don't have to take the money out. But if you've retired before age 70 and a half, then it's that 70 and a half rule. All right? So you should check out the IRS website if you've got questions about minimum required minimum distributions. The fees for not taking out the money are pretty nasty and steep, so we'd like to avoid them. Thanks for writing, Michael. All right, that's it. That's hour one. Stay tuned. We got the big interview coming up. 855-411-JILL is our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. For somebody good.